Hello, Exopolitics listeners. I'm R.V. Romero, Stellar Artistic Director of Exopolitics Radio. I'd like to thank you all for listening to our show and for taking an interest in the evolution of our planet and our species through Exopolitics Radio and the study of law and order in the universe. For over a year now, I've enjoyed working closely with your elusive host, Alfred Weber, on this fine production that we're proud to broadcast on a weekly basis and post free of charge on our website. Currently, I'm happy to say that in the last 90 days, ExopoliticsRadio.com has been visited by people in over 56 countries and 492 cities around the globe, including all 50 states in the U.S. During that time, we've averaged over 5,000 podcast downloads per show, and we're adding listeners every week with affiliates at Paranormal Radio, the Revere Radio Network, and most recently, Kansas City Online Radio. Now, I'm telling you all this to give you an update on how our show is progressing, and also to let you know that indeed, the number of intelligent people here on Earth who are catching on to the fact that there are other intelligent life forms in the universe is growing. And Exopolitics Radio is proud to be on the cutting edge of this revelation by reporting news and providing the insight and perspectives that you can't find anywhere else on the radio, in the newspapers, or on the television. We want to continue bringing you Exopolitics Radio both online and on air free of charge, as we always have, because we believe in the message and the content. However, as a studio and production team, we do have routine expenses which must be maintained in order to do so. It pains us to ask, and I promise we won't do it often, but if every listener online donated $1 a month, that would completely cover our production costs for the show and the immense amount of time spent doing research, interviews, and production time given graciously by our host. Of course, not every listener is going to be able to donate $1 or donate on a monthly basis, so if you could consider donating a little bit more, that would be a tremendous help and allow us to continue adding more and more affiliates, creating new programs, interviews, and materials, and most importantly, continue broadcasting this message of hope and truth around the globe and the universe. So whatever the outcome, I can promise you that we will continue working to bring you a unique and sincere program week in and week out, 12 months a year. So we thank you for your support of Exopolitics Radio. Please remember to go to www.exopoliticsradio.com and click on the donate menu option for more information. Thank you very much, and now back to the show.
The views expressed on Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber are those of Alfred Weber and not specifically those of 1480 KPHX or our sponsors.
Well, I look at it myself as the beginning, really, of an exploration. That's the reason we're exploring. You don't know what you'll run into on an exploration. What the sky looks like, what the stars look like. Do they still twinkle, or are they a steady light when you get outside the atmosphere?
I think that you're probably the most dangerous thing I've heard on the radio in a long time.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio, KPHX Phoenix, 1480 AM, Nova M Radio, 1480kphx.com. Our audio archives are at www.exopoliticsradio.com. And we want to remind you, listeners, that you can now sign up for the free Exopolitics Radio newsletter at our website, www.exopoliticsradio.com, and we urge you to go and sign up for our free Exopolitics Radio newsletter, because we'll be having a lot of special news there, updates about Exopolitics Radio, about when Season 2 is coming, special offers, lots of inside baseball from Exopolitics Radio. So you can sign up at www.exopoliticsradio.com. Of course, I'm your host, Alfred Weber, here at Exopolitics Radio for another stellar summer creative interlude. And we want to dedicate this program to Phoenix in two senses. To the wonderful city of Phoenix, Arizona, that is the host city of our anchor station, KPHX Phoenix. The magical bird Phoenix, which of course means rebirth, which looks like is the theme of Exopolitics Radio with the cosmic trigger that has been occurring since our launch on March 10th, 2007, within just a few days of the 10th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights. And we also want to dedicate it to our dear, dear cat, our guard cat here at Exopolitics Radio, Phoenix. Phoenix, a dear black mama cat, very huge, very, very good guard, passed over yesterday unexpectedly, defending the Exopolitics Radio office. She died in the line of duty against a dog who one expert told me was electromagnetically guided into attack and kill her. And yes, that does happen. And she died on the operating table. She had to be put away because of all the injuries. So I just want to let you know that even our dear animals are doing guard duty. And, you know, sometimes they take the hit for the mothership. So, dear Phoenix, we know that you're in a better place and that you may, you know, we actually heard a story from a person that his dog Ganesh died, appeared to him in a dream 3 months later and told him into which kennel he would be reincarnated. He drove to that kennel 2,000 miles away, and there's a whole story where that dog, you know, there was an exact dog who behaved exactly and responded to him and to the same name and everything. So animal reincarnation is a brand new field for those of you who study these issues. It's a magnificent multidimensional world, place, world, folks. And don't let these mind-in-a-box people tell you otherwise. The paradox is expanding. Well, having said all of this, tonight's creative summer show is on no other topic than extraterrestrials and nuclear war. Yes, advanced ethical extraterrestrial civilizations have been trying to warn us since the early 1950s about the dangers of nuclear war. And we'll be with Dr. Michael Sala, Executive Director of the Exopolitics Institute, exploring once again the reported meeting on the evening of February 20th, 1954, between extraterrestrial ambassadors, President then President Dwight D. Eisenhower, witnessed by cultural leaders such as the Catholic Archbishop McIntyre of Los Angeles, was independently confirmed by Vatican witnesses, at which the ET ambassador said, "Look, we're asking you to please give up the U.S. nuclear program because nuclear weapons and nuclear energy and ionizing radiation is bad for the human race, it's bad for the ecology, and it's bad for the galactic and universal ecology." And that was a real fork in the road for the human race. And 9 days later, instead of acceding to this wish, the U.S. went forward with the Bravo test of a hydrogen bomb, a 15 megaton hydrogen bomb. And we are left with the consequences, and they are quite real. You know, people think, "Oh, we're so powerful. We're so powerful. We can blow up atomic weapons." Well, the health effects of depleted uranium, which is now being used in Afghanistan, the war in Afghanistan, and in the war in Iraq starting in 2001, include cancer, diabetes, mitochondrial diseases, including Lou Gehrig's disease, Alzheimer's, genetic defects, infertility in women, genetic defects in men's sperm, birth defects, learning disabilities, and many, many others. In World War II, 5% of U.S. soldiers came back on disability. In Vietnam, after Agent Orange, 10% came back with disability. In the Gulf Wars, because of the use of depleted uranium weapons, 55% of all troops in the Gulf Wars since 2001 are on permanent disability, folks. So the extraterrestrials were right. Now hunker down and listen to these interviews and come to the X Conference in Washington, D.C., September 14th to 16th. Go to www.exopolitics.com. You get all of the details there, or x-conference.com. You know, take a few days out of your busy life, make an appointment with your congressman, and tell them to stop this madness. Tell them that we need disclosure of the extraterrestrial presence and we need to stop the use of depleted uranium weapons. It's depopulating the world and it's intentionally depopulating the world. And we can now prove that. Please stay tuned. We'll be back right after the break. Thank you. This is your host, Alfred Weber. Would you like to download instantly the book Exopolitics by Alfred Weber that founded the field of exopolitics and was a cosmic trigger to a paradigm shift of opening to extraterrestrial civilizations? Would you like to download a CD-ROM of Exopolitics Radio Season 1 uncut version with interviews you have not heard on air? You can do so now by going right now to our website, www.exopoliticsradio.com, and downloading. There is no shipping, there is no waiting. Downloading the book, Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe by Alfred Weber, and the CD-ROM, Exopolitics Radio Season 1, Uncut Version. You'll be helping yourself, Exopolitics, and Exopolitics Radio into Season 2. Thank you.
Whenever I'm down, I call on you, my friend.
I call on you, my friend. I call on you, my friend.
This is Exopolitics Radio, KPHX Phoenix, 1480 AM, Nova M Radio, 1480, kphx.com on the internet. Our audio archives are at www.exopoliticsradio.com. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, and today we have as our special guest and commentator Dr. Michael E. Sala, a pioneer in the development of exopolitics, the scholarly study of the main actors, institutions, and processes associated with an extraterrestrial presence that is not acknowledged to the general public, elected officials, or the mass media. His groundbreaking Exopolitics, Political Implications of the Extraterrestrial Presence, Dandelion Books, 2004, presents the first scholarly framework for understanding the political implications of the extraterrestrial presence. Dr. Sala is an internationally recognized scholar in international politics, conflict resolution, and U.S. foreign policy, and is the author, editor of an additional four books, including The Hero's Journey Toward a Second American Century, Essays on Peace, Why the Cold War Ended, and Islamic Radicalism, Muslim Nations, and the West. Welcome, Michael.
Aloha, Alfred.
I'm here looking at a Washington Post story, and which is dated February 19th, 2004, entitled Ike and the Alien Ambassadors, The Whole Truth About the President's Extraterrestrial Encounter by Peter Carlson, Washington Post staff reporter. And maybe I should read the first couple of paragraphs because it's a sort of a journalistic kickoff, I think, to what is a very deep story. 50 years ago tomorrow, on February 20th, 1954, President Dwight Eisenhower interrupted his vacation in Palm Springs, California, to make a secret nocturnal trip to a nearby Air Force base to meet two extraterrestrial aliens. Or maybe not. Maybe Ike just went to the dentist. There's some dispute about this. The Ike met with ETs theory is advanced by Michael Sala, a former American University professor who now runs the Peace Ambassador Program at American University's Center for Global Peace. The Ike went to the dentist theory is advanced by the folks at the Dwight D. Eisenhower Library in Abilene, Kansas, and by James M. Mixon, a dentist, professor of dentistry, and historian of presidential dental work. Just to make things more intriguing, on the night in question, the Associated Press reported this: President Eisenhower died tonight of a heart attack in Palm Springs, end of quote. 2 minutes later, the AP retracted the bulletin and reported that Ike was still alive. Indeed, Ike was alive, and he continued living until 1969. Well, Michael, I think it's fair to say that you're one of the authorities on the night of February 20th, 1954, and I wondered if you could lead us through a conversation of what led you to think that this encounter took place. And I know that you've assembled a whole tapestry of evidence, so please tell us.
Yes, Alfred, there's a lot of evidence here. There's circumstantial evidence in the form of events surrounding what happened on that evening of February 20, 1954. There are some direct witnesses who have come forward and related what occurred. Whistleblowers have also spoken about this, and there are also supporting research done by a number of researchers. So maybe I can go through each of these. In terms of what occurred on the evening of February 20, 1954, the official explanation is that President Eisenhower went to Palm Springs for a week-long vacation with his family, and on that particular night, he disappeared because he needed some emergency dental work. And then he turned up the next morning for an official function at a church. Well, the problem with that story, first off, is that it's been discovered that that is a cover story, that in fact there was no evidence that the dentist who claimed, who was said to have treated him, actually did treat him. There was no follow-up in the official presidential archives for this dentist having received any notification for having treated the president, which is in itself very unusual, because typically what happens is that anyone rendering a service to any president gets a letter of thanks from the White House, and this happens in all cases. So if this dentist did treat the president, why didn't he receive an official thank you? That's just one of the anomalies. One of the other things that is peculiar about the case is that the dentist later was interviewed, or his wife was interviewed, and there was no recollection of exactly what happened with the treatment of Eisenhower. So again, this kind of helps give circumstantial evidence that in fact something else was occurring and that this dentist story was in fact a cover. Now, I actually have spoken personally to a whistleblower, someone who worked at a nearby airbase, McGeorge Air Base, who says that on that night of February 20, that his friend, who worked as an army medic, went to an airbase where Eisenhower flew in and then flew off to Edwards Air Force Base in another Air Force jet. Now, what that suggests is that the idea that President Eisenhower was just at Palm Springs for a vacation and for some golf is really fictitious, that there was something else happening here that was significant enough for a cover story to be developed and for his movements to be very mysteriously covered up. And so that's what happened in terms of him being spirited off to this meeting that allegedly occurred at Edwards Air Force Base. Now, as for the meeting itself, this meeting is really one that is really quite momentous for all humanity, because this is allegedly the first official meeting between a representative of a major world government and visiting extraterrestrials. And what the extraterrestrials allegedly told President Eisenhower is quite remarkable. They basically told him that the development of the hydrogen bomb and the testing of these weapons, thermonuclear weapons, was a great risk not only to humanity but also impacted in some negative ways on extraterrestrial civilizations themselves. So the extraterrestrials who met with Eisenhower asked that the U.S. abandon its thermonuclear weapons program and adopt a more peaceful or more ethical approach to the development and use of weapon systems, and also be prepared to disclose to the American public the presence of visiting extraterrestrials from other worlds. So this is quite momentous, and of course not something that was going to be decided upon very lightly by national security advisers. And so this is really the context for that meeting on February 20 at Edwards Air Force Base.
Now, from the accounts of the meeting itself, what you say is that they asked for a condition, and that is that the U.S. abandon its nuclear weapons program. Do we have any further details of any conditions laid around this, or if the U.S. did that, then what course would be taken?
Well, the context of the discussions was that the nuclear weapons testing program was a great threat, and that in order for this particular group of extraterrestrials to help with the development of humanity, that they required that testing to come to an end. Essentially, they were arguing that humanity's technological development had outstripped its ethical responsibilities, so that there was great concern that these weapons would be put to some use, as indeed occurred during the Second World War, to bring that to an end. So the extraterrestrials were concerned that that would be repeated in the future, but this time using far more powerful weapon systems. Now, the thing is, what we need to remember is that with thermonuclear weapons, or the hydrogen bomb, these bombs were at a level of 1,000 times more powerful than the weapons dropped at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. For example, the weapons dropped at Nagasaki were in the 15 kiloton range. So that's 15,000 tons of TNT that were dropped on both Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Now, with the hydrogen bomb test, the Bravo test that was in fact to occur 9 days after the meeting, and that's significant itself, that this alleged meeting happened 9 days before the Bravo test, that was a 15 megaton hydrogen bomb test. Now, that is 1,000 times more powerful than the atomic bombs dropped on Hiroshima. So I think we can see quite clearly the dangers in these levels of weapons being developed and possibly being used if the circumstances deemed them necessary according to policymakers. And I think the extraterrestrials quite rightly perceived that the development of such destructive weapons, when our own ethical development had still not moved ahead that much, was a cause for great concern. And so this, I believe, was really the background for the conditions laid out by the extraterrestrials for an agreement being reached with President Eisenhower and his national security team.
Well, you know, what's interesting, Michael, is that I've just returned from a war crimes conference in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, and part of the expert testimony that was presented there by a number of scientists was that the nanoparticle radiation in the Earth's atmosphere from nuclear testing, from nuclear power plants, which is like a low-level nuclear explosion, but which were developed from the hydrogen bomb program, and from depleted uranium weapons, which were developed in 1943 at the same time as the atomic bomb. And in fact, the nuclear bombs are actually wrapped in thousands of pounds of depleted uranium around a plutonium core, so that when that plutonium core explodes, all of these nanoparticles of depleted uranium are spread throughout the upper atmosphere. That radiation has now spread around the globe in such a way that the public health indicators in mortality, in increase in cancer, various sorts of cancers, in increase in infant mortality, in increase in diabetes, in decreases in SAT scores, I mean, whatever sort of indices, it's almost like a depopulation program from the nuclear weapons program that started with the testing. So perhaps the ETs, you know, they're pointing to some very real results that we're feeling now.
Well, this is exactly the point that I think those who have come forward to reveal the Eisenhower ET meeting have made, that in fact the ETs that approached Eisenhower were very, very concerned about the lack of moral integrity or principles in developing and using nuclear technology. I mean, as you said, as you've just described, these weapons testing programs have continued, and that there has been great concern that this has polluted the environment and, in fact, is continuing now with the use of depleted uranium in weapons that are increasingly being used in more conventional military theaters. And so this tends to support the idea that the extraterrestrials were right, that in the absence of a kind of ethical, sufficient ethical development, that humanity, or at least the military, would misuse these nuclear technologies. And that seems to have been exactly what has occurred.
Well, now, these Nordic ETs, and I realize that after this meeting, they went on to a whole series of other agreements, but I still want to stay with this because the consequences of, as you stated, 9 days after this meeting, the U.S. went ahead with a scheduled hydrogen bomb test of 15 megatons. Is that what you...
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. Just to ask you this, in your book, you point out how there were a number of groups that, in effect, privatized or left the U.S. president out of the loop on extraterrestrial policy issues. And these were groups that were instigated by the Rockefeller brothers, David and Nelson, through their policy operative Henry Kissinger, the PI-40, the study group, and perhaps others. I don't have the timing sequence exactly. Perhaps you could clarify here. Here, Eisenhower meets on February 20th. Suppose he is genuinely concerned and takes the issue under advisement, and then, without any notice, the sort of militaristic forces just go ahead with the hydrogen bomb test without any referral to him? Or do you think that Eisenhower took the matter under advisement, decided to reject this overture by the Nordic extraterrestrials, and then gave the order to go ahead with the hydrogen bomb test?
Well, I think Eisenhower is a very interesting figure historically, and he is someone, having been the former commander of the Allied forces in Europe, he is someone that had a lot of military credibility. And so if anyone could have swayed the military from committing itself to a policy of developing nuclear weapons, it would have been him. And it's interesting that the meeting with the Nordic extraterrestrials happened 9 days before the Bravo test. And now, obviously, that means that everything had been moved, basically the preliminary planning had been finalized, that everything was set for this test. Now, 9 days before is really a very short time. So what that suggests to me is that Eisenhower responded to an overture by the extraterrestrials to meet urgently as a last-scale effort to prevent this testing from going ahead. And I think he responded favorably to that. The fact that it occurred 9 days before suggests that this was really Eisenhower's attempt to see if he could put a stop to this. It's interesting also that historically the very first nuclear weapon, the very first hydrogen bomb test, occurred under President Truman, just a few days before President Eisenhower was elected in 1952. So the very first hydrogen bomb test occurred on November 1st, 1952, and then President Eisenhower was elected just a few days later. So this occurred before he had the power to say yes or no. So there were forces that were keen to start a nuclear weapons program using thermonuclear weapons before Eisenhower came in. So in other words, it was like he would be forced to accept this as a fait accompli. And so that's the kind of preliminaries for this later meeting in 1954, when the second ever hydrogen bomb test is scheduled to go ahead. And this appeared to be something that Eisenhower was interested in discussing with the extraterrestrials to maybe put a stop to it. And I think the role of the Rockefellers and Henry Kissinger in privatizing the military's various weapons procurement programs and getting corporations involved was critical for this. And I think they began a process of slowly taking power away from the president and vesting it in what we now understand to be the military-industrial complex.
Industrial complex. You know, I'm going to jump right in here in this fascinating discussion because we have to take a break, but we'll continue it right at the other end. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, with Dr. Michael Sala, Director of the Exopolitics Institute. We'll be right back.
This is your host, Alfred Weber. Would you like to download instantly the book Exopolitics by Alfred Weber that founded the field of exopolitics and was a cosmic trigger to a paradigm shift of opening to extraterrestrial civilizations? Would you like to download a CD-ROM of Exopolitics Radio Season 1 uncut version with interviews you have not heard on air? You can do so now by going right now to our website, www.exopoliticsradio.com, and downloading. There is no shipping, there is no waiting. Downloading the book, Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe by Alfred Weber, and the CD-ROM, Exopolitics Radio Season 1, Uncut Version. You'll be helping yourself, Exopolitics, and Exopolitics Radio into Season 2. Thank you.
This is Exopolitics Radio, 1480 AM, Nova M Radio, www.1480kphx.com. Our audio archives are at www.exopoliticsradio.com. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. We're with Dr. Michael Sala, Director of the Exopolitics Institute, in our continuing exploration of President Dwight D. Eisenhower's alleged meeting with extraterrestrials initially on February 20th, 1954. Michael, right before the break, and you were so helpful in reminding me, we were speaking about how the issue of the president attempting to wrestle to keep control within the executive branch, perhaps from either the military intelligence forces or the Rockefeller corporate privatization forces and the think tanks that would become the center of decision making. And I was about to ask you whether the fact that it looked like Eisenhower, and you stated that Eisenhower, by arranging this meeting, seemed to be opening a diplomatic door that was firmly slammed shut 9 days later with the Bravo test. And it seems that Eisenhower lost control in those 9 days. Wouldn't you say so?
I think that is essentially what happened, that there was this last-ditch effort by the extraterrestrials, and President Eisenhower appeared to be open to considering whether or not the hydrogen bomb tests could be ended, that they would be indefinitely put a stop to those, and that this was the subject of the discussions. And the fact that it occurred 9 days before the test, because developing a testing program requires quite an extensive period of time in terms of logistics, of policy making, approval, and so forth. So by 9 days before the test itself, everything would have been pretty well finalized, so that Eisenhower is having a discussion with the ETs who bring up the possibility of abandoning the tests, shows that that this was really a last-ditch effort by the extraterrestrials, and Eisenhower appeared to be open by this. I mean, why otherwise would he have a meeting if he weren't open to this possibility? And I think what, in fact, occurred was that the fact that it led to the test going ahead 9 days later, that there was no postponement, that there was no indefinite delay, and there was no cancellation, suggested that his military advisors slammed the door shut, as you suggested, to the possibility of delaying or in any way ending the development of thermonuclear weapons, and that this, of course, was a very sad thing for President Eisenhower and for all humanity, because what that led to is a development of thermonuclear weapons, which to this day means that humanity is held hostage to these weapons being used by any of the superpowers, either of the or any of those states that possess thermonuclear weapons.
Yeah, and so it seems that we, the world, and our ecosystem, our environment, is now literally held hostage, not to mention by the 10,000 or more nuclear warheads that are, you know, actively primed now, but most importantly by the radiation, the ionizing radiation that is in the atmosphere from the nuclear tests that the extraterrestrials tried to stop, from the nuclear power plants that were developed from the technologies coming out of the nuclear tests, and the depleted uranium that were part of the nuclear tests and that now are part of the weapons being used by the U.S., Britain, and Israel in the wars in Central Asia and the Middle East. So we're now being held hostage by decisions that were made in 1954. I'm wondering, is there any evidence to show who ultimately were the decision makers? Was it the Rockefeller interests? We know that the Rockefeller Corporation seemed to own a good deal of the uranium mining around the world, along with Rio Tinto Mines, which is a corporation owned by the Queen of England.
Well, the people who made the decisions fall into a couple of different categories. One are the kind of more open political processes where you have the National Security Council and you have the various military departments and their advisors who all participated in various committees that were either in favor of or delaying possible uses of thermonuclear weapons. Now, these committees and these processes were significantly influenced by the Rockefeller family. Nelson Rockefeller was in charge of the reorganizing of government, that this was a position he held with the Eisenhower administration. So he was someone that was very influential in allocating or deciding how governmental processes would work and the policymaking process would play out. He was assisted by a number of advisors, one of which was Henry Kissinger. And as we know, Henry Kissinger is someone that is very influential in the covert committees that had been set up to deal with extraterrestrial technologies. That, in fact, he was a principal advisor to Gordon Gray, who was the head of the Psychological Strategy Board and other significant committees within the Eisenhower administration that were making decisions about what would be the appropriate policies to put in place to deal with extraterrestrials. And so I think that the whole nuclear weapons and the hydrogen bomb test would have been part of this, that essentially at some point these people would have said, well, the extraterrestrials want us to give up our thermonuclear weapons, and should we do it? And I think there would have been a policy debate. And at the end of the day, these policymakers would have said, well, these extraterrestrials, their technology is so far advanced over us, we have no possible way of influencing them. The only card we have here is our atomic weapons and our thermonuclear weapons. If we give those up, then there's no way we can influence these extraterrestrials. And so they, I believe, would have taken the decision to go ahead with the nuclear weapons testing because they felt that this was the only way they could in any way influence extraterrestrials with threats or technologies that would in somehow deter extraterrestrials.
Yes, but here we have, at the end of his term, I think, President Eisenhower exited the presidency with his famous speech in which he warned the U.S. people and indeed humanity of the perils of the military-industrial complex. And it was that military-industrial complex which was behind the nuclear weapons program and the hydrogen bomb test. So it would seem like perhaps Eisenhower himself realized that there was only so much he could do as president to try and push back the nuclear insanities that the permanent war economy wanted to establish.
Well, it's very important to realize, as you said, that Eisenhower really had limited power here. I mean, even though the President of the United States is considered to be the most powerful person on the planet, in reality, any president comes in and his power is constrained by overlapping interest groups who have varying agendas. And one of the most powerful of those groups is the military-industrial complex, who have a series of overlapping agendas and interests that constrain the powers of any president. And President Eisenhower realized just how limited his powers were, especially when it came to weapons concerning nuclear technologies, and when it came to the whole extraterrestrial phenomenon. I mean, he really did have very little influence over the final decisions that were made. That even though he is the president and in theory the commander-in-chief, in fact the real power lay with those secret committees that were set up under President Truman that slowly gained greater and greater power to deal with these issues. Because when you look at the duties of a president, I mean, a president has an incredible portfolio of duties to do. They cannot possibly make themselves expert in any one area, so that when it came to extraterrestrials and the relationship with nuclear technologies, this was not something President Eisenhower himself could make himself an expert in. He had to rely on the advice of his advisors that were hell-bent on developing these nuclear technologies because they saw them as the only effective deterrent they had against extraterrestrials. Well, they would have advised Eisenhower to go ahead with developing these technologies, even though Eisenhower personally may have felt morally repelled by these technologies and may have personally wanted to prevent them from going ahead and may have wanted to take on board the advice of the extraterrestrials. I think his advisors and the military-industrial complex would have basically weighed in upon him to not abandon these nuclear weapons technologies and to go with the advice that he was being given by his closest advisors.
And yet, there was nothing to indicate that the so-called Nordics had a hostile intent. Quite the contrary, it would seem that their intent was to protect the public health of humanity, the earthly environment, and the larger ecology of the universe, because they indicated that nuclear technology, either the radiations or the explosion, impacts on the larger universe.
That's precisely correct, Alfred. I think that they correctly identified that humanity had still not reached that moral evolution or that state of ethical principles to use these weapons or these destructive technologies in a wise way. And because of that, they were not interested in sharing any technologies with humanity. They were not interested in any way helping the military-industrial complex develop further weaponry. That they were, the extraterrestrials, the Nordics, were more interested in helping develop these ethical or spiritual principles, if you like, of humanity, so that whatever technologies we possessed at the time would be used in an ethically responsible way. And this has not occurred, as you have outlined, as you have described very well, the way in which these nuclear technologies have been increasingly used for conventional weaponry, and even depleted uranium has now started to filter over into what appears to be conventional weaponry. I mean, this is horrendous that this has been allowed to occur. But this is precisely what the extraterrestrials back in 1954 were warning of. And this is what Eisenhower himself seemed to be open to, but the door was slammed shut by those national security advisors that did not want to stop nuclear technologies from being developed, because for them this was the ace in the hole, that this was the only card that they could play that would in any way deter extraterrestrials from influencing humanity in ways that these national security advisors believed might be a threat.
we're coming to the end of this very interesting discussion, and we certainly want to continue these threads. We have maybe room for just a minute or so of comment, kind of a sum up comment, if you'd like to make it.
Well, I think this whole area of the result of extraterrestrials interacting with political leaders and opportunities to pass more peaceful policies is something that we really need to study closely, and that is something that I've been doing, and I know you've been doing that for a number of years through your organizations, and it's something we're doing at various conferences that we have been organizing through the Institute, and I just encourage listeners to visit the website, which is www.earthtransformation.com, to look at some of the issues that we are investigating and see the links to the 2006 conference where we tackled some of these issues directly, and there are DVDs and links there for people to explore. So I just want to thank you, Alfred, for having me on the show and giving me the opportunity to talk about this very important incident that occurred just over 50 years ago.
Yes, Michael, thank you very much. We look forward to your continued participation and commentary, very valued commentary here on Exopolitics Radio. We've had as our special Exopolitics commentator today Dr. Michael Sala, Director of the Exopolitics Institute. This is Exopolitics Radio, KPHX Phoenix, 1480 AM Nova M Radio, www.1480kphx.com. Our audio archives are at www.exopoliticsradio.com. I am your host, Alfred Weber. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. We've come to the end of another creative summer interlude in our Exopolitics Radio episodes, this one on extraterrestrials and nuclear war, and you can see the prescience of the extraterrestrial messages in 1954 about the dangers of nuclear war, because here we are in an increasingly unstable environment with the U.S. attempting to build first-strike anti-ballistic missile systems in Eastern Europe, forcing the Russia then into targeting Western Europe with nuclear warheads. So we're back to that sort of a game. And increasingly unstable U.S. administration that has brought in a nuclear preemptive first-strike policy, which is unheard of. I mean, you know, it's a cosmically insane, piratical regime that is contrary to international law, that has taken a hold in the United States. The Nuremberg Principles in 1945 set out the most horrendous crime was a crime against peace, which is aggressive war, and a preemptive nuclear first strike fully fits the definition of a crime against peace. And not only that, the U.S. is irradiating the world with ionizing radiation from depleted uranium weapons. Apparently, according to watchdogs, most of the depleted uranium in these weapons is coming illegally from Canada, the world's largest uranium exporter, against its own laws. So we have total lawlessness in the nuclear regime. Our solution is to follow what the extraterrestrials said. And legally, we propose a nuclear-free zone, which is no nuclear weapons, no nuclear power, no depleted uranium, no uranium exploration and uranium mining. It's an end to the experiment in uranium and radiation and the entire nuclear industry. You just have to look at Marie Curie's hands after she handled all of that radium during her life. They were shriveled. So, from all of us to all of you, and to the memory of Phoenix and to the future of the city of Phoenix, Exopolitics Radio is produced by Finnis Productions in conjunction with 1480 KPHX, Progressive Talk Phoenix, and the Nova M Network. Executive producer Richard Romero Sr., director R.V. Romero, producer and editor Chris Romero. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, wishing you a wonderful, miracle-filled, and nuclear-free day, week, and life. Thank you.